Okay, I want to take you right down to the water level. Picture this. It's December 13th, about a month ago. You're in the South China Sea, near a place called Sabina Shoal or Ascoda Shoal. The conditions are rough. You've got these high seas just chopping against the hull of a small wooden resupply boat. It's loud, it's wet, the boat is just rocking violently.
And you have to remember, for the crew on that boat, this isn't some adventure. This is their job. It's their
It
livelihood.
is. And then all of a sudden, the horizon gets very, very crowded. You have these Chinese Coast Guard vessels, maritime militia, and they're just bearing down on them.
And they aren't just passing by.
No, not at all. They're maneuvering aggressively, cutting across their bows, creating these huge wakes to try and destabilize these smaller boats. And then the water cannons start. And we need to be clear what we're talking about here.
Right, this is not a garden hose.
Far from it. This is high-pressure salt water. It's capable of shattering glass, bending metal, splintering wood. It's a weapon.
It's a visceral, violent scene, and it's absolutely designed to be terrifying.
It is. The aftermath was specific. Three fishermen injured, two boats pretty badly damaged, and their anchor lines were cut. So if you're the captain of that boat, looking at your crew, your smashed equipment, this was just a catastrophic day.
A terrible day.
But looking at the stack of research we've pulled for this deep dive, the 2025 National Security Strategy, reports on gray zone tactics. You're going to tell me this wasn't just some random bad day, right?
No, not at all. It was a move on a chessboard. What looks like, a brawl at sea is actually a stress test
A stress test of what?
of the entire regional security architecture, its data collection in its rawest form.
And that is our mission today. We are going to unpack this idea of the first island chain. We hear that term all the time, usually with stock footage of fighter jets taking off. But there is this massive disconnect in how that chain is viewed by the people defending it versus the people, challenging it.
That's the core thesis from all the sources. It turns out China is treating this first island chain, this string of islands from Japan down through Taiwan to the Philippines, as a single unified battlefield, one long front.
But the allies, the US, Japan, the Philippines.
They're essentially using three completely different playbooks. They're looking at the same map, but seeing three totally different problems. And that mismatch, that's where the real danger is.
Okay, so one chain, three different sets of rules. I want to start with the how here. We mentioned the water cannons. That falls into what strategists call the gray zone. I feel like that term gets thrown around so much it becomes, buzzword soup. What does it actually mean right now?
It's a great question because the definition is slippery. And that's by design. The gray zone is really about exploring what the reports call strategic seams.
Seems like in a piece of clothing.
Exactly, the weak point where two pieces join. China's strategy is to create incidents that just don't fit neatly into any one box our bureaucracies are set up to handle.
So it's like bureaucratic hacking. They're looking for the glitch in the system.
Precisely. Take that Sabina Shoal incident. You're in a Situation Room. Is that a law enforcement problem?
Well, on the surface, yeah. Coast Guard versus a fishing boat sounds like a police matter. You'd send cops, not the Marines.
Right. But is it a sovereignty crisis? These are waters the Philippines claims. Or is it an alliance test? The U.S. has a mutual defense treaty there. Or is this the first step on a military escalation ladder?
It feels like it's all of them at once. It's like Schrödinger's crisis.
And that's the seam. The sources call it categorical ambiguity. While the allies are in conference rooms arguing over what to call it, is this police? Is this war? Do we send a frigate or a lawyer? China is out there changing the status quo on the water.
So the goal isn't to win a battle in the old-fashioned sense.
No, the goal is paralysis. It's to create political infighting that delays any kind of coordinated response. If Washington thinks it's a police matter and Manila thinks it's an invasion, you get friction, you get hesitation, and China thrives in that hesitation.
That's fascinating. The sources really highlight that this lets China change behavior without ever offering up a clean, definable attack.
Exactly. No D-Day, no Pearl Harbor. Those things are clear. They unify an enemy. This murky middle ground is what they want.
They want to apply pressure without triggering that unified response. A missile is obvious. A water cannon makes everyone pause and think.
And that pause is the weapon.
And what really struck me in the reading was the target of this weapon. It's not just military. We talked about strategic competition, which sounds so sterile. But for the people on the water, this is about survival. The sources call this targeting the civilian edge.
This is a crucial insight. We tend to focus on destroyers, jets, missile batteries. But China's strategy is largely focused on the ecosystem around the territory.
So it's economic warfare, just masked as a maritime dispute.
Yes. If you look at the pattern, they are pressuring the confidence of coastal communities, of investors.
Mm.
Think about it. If a fisherman can't fish because his boat might get smashed, what does he do?
He stops going out. He finds a new job. Maybe the processing plant he sells to closes down. The whole harbor just gets quiet.
Exactly. If a trader can't move goods without being harassed, shipping insurance rates go up. Investors pull money out of coastal development.
You bend the environment to your will.
Without firing a single military shot. You don't need to seize an island if you can make it economically and socially unlivable for the other side. You hollow out their confidence. You win by default because they just leave.
That is a terrifyingly effective strategy. So that's the playing field. China sees one long line to pressure, one garden hose to squeeze.
That's a good way to put it.
So let's pivot. If China sees one battlefield, how is it possible the Allies are seeing three? I was reading the breakdown of their strategies, and it's almost like they're speaking different languages.
They essentially are. The sources point to three distinct national playbooks right now, and they aren't just a little different. They have fundamentally different goals, different risk tolerances.
Okay, let's break them down. Let's start on the front line. Playbook one, Manila, the Philippines. They're the ones getting hit with the water cannons. What's their strategy?
Manila's playbook is really interesting right now. The sources define it as sovereignty, visibility, and endurance. They're playing a game of what's being called radical visibility.
I have noticed this. A few years ago, these things would happen and we'd hear maybe rumors. Now we see GoPro footage, drone shots. There are journalists on the Philippine Coast Guard ships. It's all over social media.
And that is the strategy. It's intentional. They're releasing everything. They're dragging this conflict out of the shadows because they want to make it impossible for the world to ignore.
So they're saying, we're not letting you hide this in the gray zone. We're turning on the floodlights.
Exactly. And for them, the stakes are laid out in their national security policy. It's not just pride. It's economic survival. The government has to defend the confidence of those coastal communities we just talked about. They can't afford to be quiet.
So Manila is loud. They're visible. They're screaming fire. Now, let's move north. Playbook two. Tokyo. Japan. It feels like a completely different vibe.
Totally different. If Manila's screaming fire, Tokyo is quietly checking the sprinkler system, making sure it works, but hoping they never, ever have to turn it on. Japan's playbook is all about perimeter defense.
Perimeter defense.
Right. Their whole focus is on managing constant friction.
Friction management? That sounds exhausting. Like a job where nothing ever gets solved.
It is a grind. For Japan's Ministry of Defense, this is a daily reality. Chinese incursions in the East China Sea happen constantly.
But we don't see the viral videos from Japan.
No, and that's the point. Their goal is to prevent any single incident from spiraling into a political escalation. They want to hold the line without starting a war. They are very capable, but very cautious. They want to de-escalate.
So if Manila's trying to sound the alarm, Tokyo's trying to keep the noise down.
In a way, yes. Tokyo worries that if they escalate, they could trigger a conflict they aren't ready for. The sources point out a key fear for them, that a crisis in Taiwan could surge south in just a matter of days. And they know that being prepared isn't the same as being synchronized.
Which brings us to the big player. Playbook three, Washington. I was reading the 2025 National Security Strategy, the NSS, and the language there feels like it shifted. It feels bigger.
It has. This is the connected deterrence playbook. The U.S. has explicitly declared the first island chain a single connected deterrence problem.
They also use the term operational geography.
Right, and those words matter. The U.S. is trying to zoom out. They're saying, look, we don't care if it's a rock in the Philippines or straight near Japan. We're building a military to deny aggression anywhere along this belt.
It sounds good on paper, but is there a disconnect between Washington's big picture and that fisherman getting blasted with water?
A huge disconnect. Washington is thinking about integrated infrastructure and networked defense. Manila is looking at a broken fishing boat. And Tokyo is staring at a radar screen, hoping nothing blinks red. Three different perspectives.
Unless China exploits.
Absolutely. They press civilians in the south while surging military signals in the north, and they watch as each ally puts on their own specific pair of glasses.
So we have these three playbooks. Manila shouting, Tokyo whispering, Washington planning. Why is this a problem now? We've muddled through for decades.
Because of time. The compression of time, the luxury of muddling through is gone.
This is where those Justice Mission 2025 drills come in. The sources spent a lot of time on this.
Right. In late December, China ran these huge military drills around Taiwan, basically simulating a blockade, sealing the island off.
And these weren't just standard exercises.
No, the scale and the tempo were different. The analysis suggests these drills are designed to do one thing: compressed decision time.
Compressed decision time. What does that mean practically?
It means a real crisis will move faster than the Allies can talk to each other. Think about it. An incident happens. Washington has to call Tokyo. Tokyo has to call Manila. They have to share intel, agree on what they're seeing.
And while they're on the conference call.
The reality on the water has already changed. By the time they've finished debating if it's a Taiwan problem or a South China Sea problem, China has already established a new normal. The crisis has moved on.
The bureaucracy is too slow for the conflict.
Exactly. Three playbooks means three decision-making loops. China is betting their one loop is faster than our three combined. They act, we discuss, they act again. We're still discussing the first act.
That's a terrifying thought. It's an OODA loop problem.
Yeah.
So how is the U.S. trying to fix this? The sources do mention some specific policy moves to force everyone onto the same page.
Yes, Washington is trying to muscle this alignment into existence. It starts with that declaratory policy in the 2025 NSS we talked about.
But how does a declaration help? It's just words.
Words on paper can be traps. By stating clearly that the first island chain is one theater, the U.S. is creating a track for itself and its allies. It narrows the room for improvisation, for looking the other way.
What do you mean by improvisation?
I mean, if something happens in the Philippines, the U.S. has now said on paper, this triggers broader alliance questions. You can't just pretend it's a local dispute anymore. It forces the system to treat a Manila problem like a Taiwan problem. It binds their fates together.
It automatically raises the stakes, removes the opt-out clause.
It does. And they're backing it with money. The new NDAA, the defense budget, is putting cash behind it. The signing statement highlights $1 billion just for the Taiwan Security Cooperation Initiative.
And I saw mandates for joint uncrewed development, drones, basically.
Right. Forcing the military-industrial bases to work together. If Japan, the U.S., and the Philippines are all using the same drone systems, sharing data is instantaneous.
But there's something even more practical and maybe more hopeful that just happened, a very unsexy acronym, the ACSA.
The Acquisition and Cross-Servicing Agreement between Japan and the Philippines.
I know logistics agreement sounds like the most boring thing in the world.
It is paperwork, but it's the paperwork that wins wars. We get excited about missiles. Logistics is the lifeblood. This isn't about fancy weapons. It's about the plumbing. It lets them share food, fuel, ammunition.
So if a Philippine Coast Guard ship is out of gas during a confrontation, a Japanese ship can literally pull up and refuel them.
Literally. And that logistics layer makes real coordination possible. You can't have a unified defense if you can't even refuel each other's ships. The sources call this the integrated infrastructure.
It's the glue.
It is. It's not flashy, but it's what makes deterrence credible. It's a sign that Tokyo and Manila are finally starting to stitch their playbooks together. It tells China, we aren't just allies on paper. Our ships run on the same fuel.
So we're seeing some movement, but I want to go back to that gray zone idea. Even with all this infrastructure, doesn't that ambiguity still give China the advantage?
It absolutely does. And this is the hardest part to solve. You can have all the fuel agreements in the world, but you still need a shared threshold.
A threshold for what?
For action, for pulling the trigger. The 2025 NSS puts the strategy on paper, but can three different nations actually agree on when to act?
Because for that fisherman, the trigger is clear. I'm getting sprayed with a water cannon. Help me.
Right, that's visceral. But for the strategist in Tokyo, that might just be friction to be managed. For the planner in Washington, it's a data point. The danger is that the next crisis won't look like an invasion. It'll just look like another bad day at sea.
And the allies will argue about the definition of the day while China advances.
That is the risk. The danger isn't that everyone's ignoring the problem. It's that everyone is paying attention in different ways. And the adversary designs their operations to slide right into those cracks between our perspectives.
So the aha moment here is we're looking at the same map but seeing three different movies.
Precisely. And the clock is ticking because of that time compression. The challenge isn't just buying more ships. It's stitching those three worlds, the fisherman, the perimeter defender in Tokyo, the global strategist in DC, into one coherent response before the next near miss.
Because the next near miss might not be a miss.
And if the playbooks aren't stitched together by then, the speed of the crisis will decide the outcome, not us.
That is a sobering thought. We have the strategy, the funding, the logistics, but the human element, the decision to act in the face of ambiguity, that's still the wild card.
It always is. The machinery of state can be built, but the political will to synchronize, that's much harder to manufacture.
I want to leave you with a thought to chew on. We've talked about water cannons and treaties, but think about that threshold. If you were a leader in Manila, Tokyo, or Washington, where would you draw the line? At a damaged boat, an injured sailor, a sunk vessel. And more importantly, would you bet your country's safety that your allies drew that line in the exact same place? Because if you're wrong, the gray zone suddenly becomes very black and white.
And usually by the time you realize you were wrong, it's too late to check the playbook.
Thanks for diving in with us. We'll see you next time.